Welcome to the Pure Bliss Show with Mayma Carmo. This is where we'll inspire you to transcend, transform, make magic, live your soul purpose, and be the unicorn that you truly are. Live in pure bliss.
Hi, everyone. This is Mayma Carmo, and welcome to the Pure Bliss Show. Today, I have an amazing guest. Her name is Danielle Tate. Danielle began her own company in her 20s. And she went on to write an amazing book called The Elegant Entrepreneur that helps women entrepreneurs start and grow their businesses. She's a fitness buff and an entrepreneur, and she's an amazing woman, and I'm so happy to have her on the show today. Danielle, welcome to the Pure Bliss Show. How are you doing today?
I'm amazing. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It was great to connect with you last year and to learn about your work and your book and how you help women entrepreneurs to start their businesses, to grow their businesses, and kind of to really figure out, you know, what makes them happy and go into that space. So tell me, what made you write the book, The Elegant Entrepreneur?
So I didn't set out ever to write a book. I didn't even set out to be an entrepreneur. I'm sort of an accidental entrepreneur. So in the course of starting a business and growing a business over a decade, I read a lot of business books, and none of them ever talked to me, the smart woman with a business idea, but not an MBA. And none of them ever told me how it felt to be a woman going through this process of building a company. And so I ended up writing Elegant Entrepreneur to fill that gap, to have the book that I always wished for when I first started.
That's awesome. So how does one go about beginning a book like that? Because were you pretty much kind of doing what worked for you in business and kind of in terms of starting up your business? Because it's not really like, for example, when I began my business, there was no roadmap to how to start a business without having an MBA. I kind of had to feel for myself what felt right for me, and kind of I stumbled, I fell, got back up. How did you figure out the pieces and how do you put them together to start that book and begin that process?
So much like you, there was a lot of stumbling and falling and failing and figuring it all out. To be completely honest, I sat down one night with a glass of wine and just poured out all of the things that I wish someone would have told me when I started. The good, the bad, the ugly, the crying in the shower, all of it. The things that, you know, get glossed over in Fortune magazine and are never talked about. And so I just wrote and wrote and wrote and wrote. And I'm like, oh, I'm done. And, you know, coming back the next day, I was nowhere near done. But those right. emotions ended up being the, you know, like the ends of each chapter are, how does it feel? And so that sort of like internal release of all of these feelings is sort of what happened and bookends each chapter.
Yeah, I think that's so important that you mentioned that, because, you know, people tend to see what's in Fortune and what's in Inc., like the ending of the story or the success portion of it. I think it's so important to highlight the emotions behind the business, behind building the business, because that's what it's kind of learning how to handle the emotional part of it. That's what makes you stronger as a leader, stronger and better. And so, what are some of the things you talk about in your book? And I've read the book, but, can you share some things that people have to deal with emotionally and give some tips on how to overcome them as you build your business?
Absolutely. So, you know, as women, we're emotional to begin with. So you might as well embrace the fact. If you just bottle it all up as you're starting a business, it's going to blow up at some point. So right at the beginning, as you think of this business idea, it's so easy to just fall hopelessly in love with it and with the life you're going to create and the good you're going to do and the money you're going to make and, you know, how you're going to spend it. And so one of my first tips for women thinking about business is stop. Don't get emotionally attached to a business idea until you really prove out that it could make money, that there is a market for it. And if there isn't, if you're not emotionally attached, you can change it, or you can start over again, and it's going to be a lot less painful. One of the other things that I really struggled with, I'm a very confident, outgoing person, but I never felt like I earned the title entrepreneur. I just never owned it. I hid behind, oh, I have a website, I run a business, and by the time I finally figured out that, yeah, I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a female founder, when I finally said that and owned that, I became so much more powerful and successful and found other people like me to be friends with and to network with and connect with. So my other tip for women is embrace the fact that you are a female founder and say you're a woman entrepreneur, even if it's uncomfortable, because you will grow into the title.
I like that. So I think I read someplace that one of the things that women have as an asset that men don't have is that ability to feel more. You know, I think women often think that that's not an asset, but I think it's a huge asset. Our ability to intuit, to feel, and to bring that emotional piece to the table. So I love that you have that as part of your book. Tell me, since you wrote your book, what has that done for you in terms of changing your business model, and how is that helping other women entrepreneurs to kind of, you know, feel their own truth, find their own truth, and to build their businesses from a place of a heart space?
So writing Elegant Entrepreneur and having it come out has been a game changer for me. I did a really good job building a company and a small family very quietly. And in publishing a book, all of a sudden you're out and about and speaking with two people and four people. And, you know, I ended up becoming the spokeswoman for a nonprofit that helps women, at-risk women and refugees with entrepreneurship training to become financially stable. It's called Empowered Women International. And that's been this huge change and shift in helping them with their business plans and launching the businesses that give their family economic security has been huge. And then mentoring and talking to different women that have read Elegant Entrepreneur or are partway through their company and reading the back half, which is about growing your company, has been an amazing opportunity. And just, it's sort of magical. If you do the scary thing, like, you know, starting the company or writing the book, all kinds of cool things happen as a reward for doing the scary thing.
Yeah, I love that. One of the quotes in your book I love, you said, surround yourself with dreamers and doers, believers and thinkers, and those who see the greatness within you. I love that. I think it's important to, as you're dreaming, is to have people around you who are your tribe that think like you, who are dreamers, who are believers, who believe in magic, because that's where the ideas and the creativity come from. So I wanted to ask you, as a young woman, have you always had a bent for entrepreneurship or kind of being your own person? Tell me how Danielle Tate was as a child and a young woman.
As I understand it, I was very precocious. I never met a stranger. I could always just talk to anyone about almost anything. I was a Girl Scout for 11 years, so door-to-door sales was natural. I'm a third-generation salesperson, so selling things is fun and exciting and something that I enjoy doing and parlayed into a career after college. But I didn't have a business. I didn't have a business degree. I thought I was going to be a cardiologist. So my whole life track shift to entrepreneurship was a bit of a surprise, but at least capitalized on being very outgoing and also enjoying the sales process.
Right. So when you began your business, did you have children already, or at what point did you start the business, and how did being an entrepreneur affect your life? Because it does change who you are. If you're a single person, sometimes it's much easier than if you're a parent and married, having to juggle, you know, life and family and running a business. So when did you start, and how did that change your life?
So I started my company at 25, and I did not have children. I considered it sort of my firstborn, and I was the number one sales rep for a Fortune 500 company. So I was incredibly busy and incredibly successful for someone of my age bracket. And to have an idea and leave, you know, the six-figure salary plus bonuses, the company-issued Land Rover, to start a tech company when women in tech really didn't exist and the bubble had burst for dot-coms was really risky and crazy, but it was part of a plan. I knew that eventually I was going to be a mom. And my mom stayed home with me and was just the most amazing person. Like, I would come home to, like, my friends, we would have baked Alaska when we got off the school bus, for real.
Oh, wow.
And so I knew I didn't want to be a full-time stay-at-home mom, but when motherhood came, I wanted the flexibility in my career to take the time that I wanted and nurture my family. And so that helped me make that crazy jump or leap into entrepreneurship from corporate America, because I realized that I had time to build a company or an empire and then backfill my position a little bit, maintain control, but then also have time for my family.
Yeah, I think that's really important because a lot of women struggle with that. They struggle with dealing with, you know, wanting to follow their passion and having to, you know, be there for their kids and wanting that as well. I mean, I know that as a mom, running a business, running a nonprofit and being a single parent is always trying to balance giving your children the best and then also doing what you love. And I think a lot of moms have that guilt about, you know, how do I make this work? But you can find a balance. I think you have done that. What really impressed me about you when we first met is you're talking about, you know, being with the family and being able to, is you have more than one venture. You have multiple things that you're doing. You're a fitness buff. And so you're very active and you found a way to make that balance work for you, which is really, you know, admirable. So tell me about what do you do? Tell me about your children and your, the fun things that you do with them. What is your life like when you're not working full time and, you know, traveling and speaking and doing your, charity work?
So I have a little boy who is 7 and he is, we call him, my husband's an entrepreneur too, our favorite startup. He is a joy. You never know what he's going to think of or what he's going to do. Most recently, we befriended a camel at a petting zoo and have all these amazing pictures. A camel that would literally like come snuggle
right
with you, like rub his face next to you. And camels typically hate people.
Oh
so
my gosh.
That was one of our grand adventures at this rescue zoo. And we fed the tigers, pet the porcupine. I had no idea that they were nice little kind creatures, and they are. And most recently, he was making himself a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And it was an exercise in letting your child do something for themselves that might be messy, but they need to start doing their own thing and be independent. And so by peanut butter and jelly sandwich number 2, he looked at me and was like, you know, Mom, I think that we should have a gourmet peanut butter and jelly shop that had all kinds of different nut butters and all kinds of different jams.
Oh, wow.
And this, that, and the other. And it was like his first business idea. And I just
is that
was
your next
delighted
venture?
And so literally we have, my refrigerator is now full of jars. He's making his own peanut butter.
That is fantastic. That's how it starts. He could be the next, like, you know, entrepreneur at like 10, you know, or 12 or whatever. These things do happen,
like,
you know.
It's like, yeah, it's like Honest Tea for peanut butter. He's like, it shouldn't have lots of junk in it. And honestly, we had the neighbors over last night and we did a taste testing and they were pretty impressed.
That's awesome. I think it's so cool when kids see their parents doing things and want to kind of model after. That's how it starts. So seeing a model, like seeing you kind of jump into what you love to do and pursue it and have fun doing it. Because I think a lot of people business is serious. It is, but it should be fun. Like, you should enjoy experimenting with new things and trying new things out. And I think that's the fun part of it. And encouraging your kids and inspiring them to also, you know, try to have their own businesses, whether it's peanut butter or mud pies or whatever that is. I think that's super cool. So I wanted to bring something back up we talked about earlier. We kind of glossed over the things that women deal with in terms of beginning a business and the fears they face. And I really want this podcast to be a very thought-provoking podcast. And so a lot of women I talk to who call me and ask for advice and mentorship or coaching on business startup and growth are afraid of different things. They're afraid of not succeeding or afraid of, am I doing it right? And one of the things we don't talk about often is that ugly cry in the shower when you're thinking, you know, did I screw this up or no one's going to buy it or I didn't make my numbers this quarter. I want to talk more about the things that aren't so, that you don't see in the magazines, you know? So what are some of the things that you faced and how can we encourage other women who are starting up to just think and know that that's okay and it does pass. And then the painful part is part of the growth, right?
Absolutely. Before I share a painful story, I do want to start with that tip. One of my personal mantras is opportunity is failure in disguise. Or you can flip it, failure is opportunity in disguise. So every time I've had a massive fail, I've taken a step back and looked at it and, of course, had a good cry about it, but I've always found a way to work that into an opportunity. So if you can look down the line and instead of being afraid of failing, do your best and know if you fail, you're going to learn something from it and another door will open. It sounds trite, but year after year, 10 years in, it's the truth. I think the scariest thing, the biggest failure I experienced was a series of copycat companies that stole intellectual property from Miss Now Mrs.
Yes.
And so I ended up testifying in federal court 8 months pregnant. And I was so scared. I was scared that the stress was harming my unborn baby. I was scared that I wasn't going to win the suit and, you know, my company baby was going to be, you know, damaged irreparably. And I was just frustrated. I'm like, I am a failure. How did I build this and not think that somebody would steal from me? And I can tell you that I got through that point. I settled those different lawsuits. It made me an incredibly stronger person. It helped me think about ways to protect future businesses and to retroactively protect Miss Now Misses. So you can do the big fails and continue to bounce. You know, the harder you hit the floor, the higher you bounce.
Can you tell the listeners about your business, Miss Now Misses, and what that, we kind of didn't go over that. What is it? What did it do and how did it start and what the goals were, what your mission was?
So Miss Now Misses is an online name change service for brides. So we condense the 13-hour tedious process of collecting all the forms and standing in office lines into 30 minutes online for $30. And where did this idea come from? It came from my own name change misadventures. It took me 3 tries to get my new name on my driver's license. And I was just so frustrated because I'm not dumb. I'm super organized. And it was just all of these like silly, dumb, like red tape things like, oh, you filled out the wrong form, but it was the form you gave me. And oh, you brought your marriage certificate, but not your certified marriage certificate. All of this stuff. And I was like, why isn't there something like TurboTax for name change? So that was the spark that ignited Miss Now Misses.
That's wonderful. And so where are things? Is the business still running? Is it still up and running and functional, or have you changed paths? Where is that now?
It's still going. We're at 360,000 customers in 2 countries. We have a lot of different brand extensions, like Get Your Name Back for divorcees, Name Change Next Step for people doing adoptions and legal name changes, the Married Name Game to help women figure out if they should change their name and if they're going to, what the ideal name is for them. There's a patent pending on the algorithm behind that game. There's Marriage License Now that helps give you just the information you need to file for your marriage license. So yes, it is ever, ever ongoing, ever growing, ever changing and expanding.
That is fantastic. I love hearing this. And so what I like a lot too, you always seem very relaxed when I talk to you, very chill. And I'm like, she runs multiple companies. You have a child, you travel, you have your charity work, and you have your book. So you must have a team that helps you manage all of this. How do you build a team that you can trust with your passion? How do you do that?
That's a great question. And I'll tell you about a failure on that front too. So when Miss Now Misses was first launched, you know, you never know. You hope that it's going to be successful. So I had quit my job. We launched the company. We had our first customer within 30 minutes and we just started growing like crazy. And I hit the point where I was like, I can't get anything done to grow the company because all I'm doing is handling customer email and phone calls and a little bit of media. So I did a really dumb thing. I hired a friend. And then I hired her friend. Yeah. And then I hired her friend.
You don't hire friends
and
family.
And they were friends and I was the boss. And I ended up having to fire my friend and her friend who are no longer my friends. So ladies listening in, please learn from me. Hire people that aren't your friends. They can always give you advice and you can give them small projects to help you as you start up, but don't hire them. And then find people who complement your weaknesses. Like, you know what you're good at and you know what you're so-so at, and you know what you're just awful at and hate to do and hide from. Hire people that take the burden of things off of you that you don't like to do. And be very specific about, here is your job expectation. Here's a binder. Here's the processes. Here's what I expect of you. And here's what you can expect from me. And let's enter into this relationship sort of eyes wide open. That would be my best advice for building your team.
That's wonderful. One of the things I liked in your book is you have a chapter, Elegant Insight. Well, it's a subchapter, Elegant Insight number 9. And it's titled Delegate Until It Hurts. And that is so important for entrepreneurs starting out because, you know, when it's your baby and you sit there in your bed or in your office, wherever the heck you are, office, and you make this thing come to life and you start to grow it. At some point you have to delegate because you can't do everything. But if you don't delegate, you can't run a functional, sustainable business. Tell me about the chapter Delegate Until It Hurts and why it's important for women to do that in business.
So it is so hard. Like you said, your business is your baby. I compare it to handing your infant to a stranger on the subway.
Yes.
Like that horrible,
that
oh my
so
gosh,
true.
Feeling.
That's
but
my child.
You have to realize that, you know, children go to preschool. Children go to real school. Like you need to delegate because you're the person with the vision. You're the person responsible for making this company sing and grow. And you can't do that if you're doing everything. So much like with an infant, the sooner you let an aunt or a cousin or somebody watch them, the easier it is for you to let go a little bit at a time. If you wait until that child's 5 and can say, oh, mommy, please don't go, you're in a world of trouble. And the same goes with businesses. So you have to kind of think of the company ahead of your own emotions sometimes.
Yeah, that's very true. And I think along those lines, One thing that I wanted to share in your book and that I think is so important is to have a business structure. I think sometimes we go into business and because it's our own business, we go into it as without a lot of structure. But for it to grow and be sustainable, it has to have formalized processes, procedures, and to be operational. So what advice do you have for women in terms of women or men listening? They go from just the grassroots idea to getting it to become a fully functionalized business that runs without them. Because you don't want to be in your business. You want to be able to run it and be the visionary, but not to be in it. So how do you go from grassroots to operationalized? How have you done that in your world?
So I always encourage people to begin with the end in mind. So some people want to be the unicorn. They want to have the billion-dollar corporation, and they don't mind spending all of their waking time and most of their sleep time they should be sleeping for years to build that massive company to exit big. That's not what I wanted. I wanted to have a company that afforded me a lifestyle that I could live comfortably, I could travel, I could do the things that were important to me, and I would also still have time for my family and my friends. So then I work backwards. So there's a couple different, you know, there's business model canvas, there's just the pitch deck, there's a formal business plan, but you need to understand, okay, here's the number I need to hit, or here's where I want to be. And then map out, you know, how are you going to get there? Who are your customers? How are you going to talk to them? When you talk to them, how are you going to convert them to buying something? And once they buy something, can you get them to buy another thing or tell their friend? So you really do have to logically plot out the steps. They won't always go exactly how you plan, but having that plan in place is really essential to making sure that you are successful and you're not sort of stuck like as a slave to a business, just trying to make it get by.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I that's really powerful and true. Along those lines, one of the things that I know about you is that you have women around you who serve as mentors or they're part of your tribe. And I do as well. I wouldn't be where I am without having women that I could talk to and bounce ideas off, women who are giving me advice all the time about whether it's advice on business or about how to be a better leader or how to deal with my emotions as I'm growing my business, managing employees and so forth. And so how important is it to have people around you who are, whether it's a mastermind group or mentors that can help guide you? How is that important to you and how has that guided your experience as an entrepreneur?
It's incredibly important, and I also failed dramatically at that. I, for the first 6 years of business, didn't have entrepreneur friends because, remember, I couldn't bring myself to call myself an entrepreneur.
Exactly.
And so it was lonely and stressful and scary. A lot of it was good, but I just felt weird and like I didn't fit in. And when I finally started going to entrepreneurial events and different meetups and different things, I started to find people who were similar, not the same, but similar to me, and making the time in my schedule to have coffee with them or lunch with them, just to like trade stories, not necessarily like, oh, would you please be my mentor, but let's just know what each other does. That has really helped form my tribe, as you call it. And now that I have these people, I'm like, wow, why did I wait so long to start doing this? So they're incredibly important and they make my life so much easier and so much better. And they stretch me and they shove me into opportunities I don't think I'm quite right for. And so they also help me grow.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I want people who are listening to really take that into account. You can't work in a vacuum. You can't work alone. You need your tribe to help you grow your business and to grow your life. And I find it, for me, I have a mastermind I'm part of that I take part in every 2 weeks. I have a ton of people that are friends of mine that support me. And I have mentors that I have lunch with, you know, every couple of months just to get their pulse on how I'm doing and where they are. And it's very helpful because being an entrepreneur is pretty challenging and it's exciting and it's wonderful, but it's also about having people around you to help lift you up and to help you grow and to see where you're strong and find where you're weak and to help mitigate those weaknesses. So that's incredibly important. So Danielle, I wanted to ask you, do you think you're living your soul purpose in your work right now?
I think so. Or if I'm not, I'm on my way. This chapter of not just being an entrepreneur, but helping other women. I love men too, but really specifically helping women start and grow companies. It's just one of those things where I'm like, you know what? Like, I feel like entrepreneurship is like the ultimate vehicle for success as a woman, because you can define what success is instead of fitting into a box that someone else gave you for success. So being able to help more women at least consider that is very amazing to me and something that I do think I'm supposed to be doing.
Great. So aside from those things, what are the things that make you happy? Like, what do you really enjoy doing that bring you joy in your life?
So I love animals. Mm-hmm. I love animals.
Like camels?
I love camels. I have a cat. I have a collection of squirrels on my deck that aren't quite pets, but are getting close. I did have a pet squirrel in college. So I love traveling. I try to get down to Turks and Caicos and just hang out a couple times a year. I scuba dive. I ski. I do megaformer workouts. That's one of my sanity points. So
tell me
a little bit of everything.
The workouts. Tell me about what is it called? Megaformer workouts? What is that about?
So if you're familiar with the Pilates reformer machine, it's like that.
I've been on that before. It's very scary.
Souped up.
Very frightening.
Yeah, a French bodybuilder
really?
Came and revamped it. So it's much more intense of a workout. And so you burn 600 calories. You do all of your strength training, all of your core work.
Oh, wow.
It's 50 minutes and you're done. And for me, it's so challenging. All I can focus on is the movement and my next breath. I can't think about work. I can't think about family. I can't think about anything. And so in a way, it's almost a form of meditation and it's so good for my brain and obviously also helps with just staying in shape.
Wonderful. So how do you stay in shape along those lines mentally and spiritually? What is in your toolkit to help you live that, you know, life 360 of bliss?
So from the physical component, there's the megaformer workouts. I just started mixed martial arts training on Monday nights to help stretch me a little bit further. I'm also
methodist.
Yes, in my spare time. It's my lunch break. It's noon on Mondays. They come and beat me. So you should see my elbows. They're black and blue
from my first
business. But I'm Methodist. We go to church on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
I wake up each morning and just say a prayer of thanks for all of the things in my life. And I feel like starting the day with gratitude is a really, really fresh start.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So one of the things I'm working on is a toolkit that I'll be launching for entrepreneurs to help them mentally, spiritually, and just kind of soulfully, because I think that I love that people think about the practical things about being an entrepreneur, but I think one of the challenges is just keeping yourself balanced, mind and body and spirit, as you're building your business. I find it's incredibly important to have a toolkit to deal with those things, because Building a company is a lot of work. It's time consuming. It'll pull you. It'll push you. It'll stretch you. It'll make you laugh, cry, fall on the ground, want to give up. But then when you have the business formed and you're succeeding in it, it's incredibly rewarding. So I think that's really great that you are able to find ways to stretch yourself physically with the MMA, mixed martial arts, with the Pilates, whatever it's called, the reformer thing that pulls you and pushes you. And then also you have your spiritual component. Tell me what's next for Danielle. I mean, do you have other books coming out? Do you have other places you want to travel? Like, what other things do you have on your list of bucket list items that you want to accomplish?
So short term, I have a children's book coming out, E is for Entrepreneur, in the next couple of months. And that was because I realized I was reading all these alphabet books to my son, and they were about construction and things he was interested in, but there wasn't anything about entrepreneurship. And I feel like knowing about that early in life is really important. So that's coming out. I'm also working on another nonfiction book, and I really am excited to travel the world and talk to other women entrepreneurs around the globe. I feel like that's my next big thing. So I am slowly figuring that out. And if anyone is listening, has ideas, I'm totally open to them.
That's awesome. But what else would you want to share with our listeners today? Do you have any other, besides any other projects? I know you have a blog you do every Friday, the Founders Friday blog. Tell me about that.
Yes. So I'm forever a problem solver. So I feel like one of the problems that women entrepreneurs face is we just don't really see a lot of role models. There are some, and more are popping up in magazines. But again, those are the mega entrepreneurs with billion-dollar companies. And so I decided every Friday to feature a female founder for hashtag Female Founder Friday and ask her who she was, what her business is, what her biggest failures were, and what her advice was, and then also her theme song. And the idea was to not only showcase these amazing women entrepreneurs, but also provide a place where other women can come and get inspired. Because look, there's somebody who's kind of like me doing something similar to what I want to do. And if she can do it, I can do it. So that's something I'm really proud of and excited about. I also have, I'm working on an app. I always put up these business and inspirational quotes and little elegant insights on Instagram as Elegant Entrepreneur. And so I'm creating an app where you can sign up for free and pick the time of day, and you'll receive an elegant insight to just help you, you know, refocus and be as successful as possible as a woman.
That's fantastic. So before we sign off, I had two more questions for you. So the first, almost last question is, in three words, how do you define success?
Oh, that's a good question. happiness, security, and excitement.
Happiness, yes. Security, yes. And excitement. I love that. And then my last question is, what are the top three things you're most proud of in your life that you've accomplished?
I'm by far most proud of Merrick, my son. He is the best thing I have ever done. I cannot wait to see what he does to change the world for the better. I'm also incredibly proud of Elegant Entrepreneur. I feel like it's a guide to help women truly start up and scale up. And as women, if we can solve the problems that we face and our communities face, we again are going to make a huge impact on the world and be really proud of ourselves and have made things better in a global scale. So like ripple effect out of the book. And then of course, This Now Misses, like taking an idea as a 20-something with zero business background and creating a multi-million-dollar company is something that I'm also very proud of.
Yeah, and I'm proud of you as well. I mean, I love what you've done. I love that you've done whatever your heart desires, you just pursue it. I think that's really powerful and exciting. People are always asking me, how do you do it all? And I think about you all the time because you kind of just run with what makes you happy and you pursue your bliss, and that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So thanks for being on the show. Before we head off, can you share your social media handles for Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and are you on Pinterest? I don't think you are.
Yes.
I think you're on.
Yes.
You are. Okay. Can you share your handles?
Sure. So across all of the social media platforms, I'm Elegant Entrepreneur, except Twitter. I'm Elegant_Entre because I ran out of characters. So please come check me out. You can come to elegantentrepreneur.co to check out the Female Founder blog. There's a way for you to contact me. I love hearing about people's businesses, ideas, speaking opportunities, whatever it might be. My favorite thing to do is interface with women entrepreneurs and hear what's happening and how I might be able to help.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Danielle. And it was great chatting with you. Until next time, everybody, live bliss, love bliss, and be bliss. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Pure Bliss Show with Mema Carmo. We hope you are inspired by the show. Remember, you're the catalyst that the world has been waiting for. In each moment, live in pure bliss.